Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, an interfaith delegation from Israel makes a historic visit to the Vatican, with Christian, Jewish and Muslim leaders pledging themselves to work for peace in the Holy Land. And a vocation to the priesthood. We hear from the new director of the National Office for Vocations in England and Wales, Father Christopher Jamieson. Pope Benedict met on Thursday with Christian, Jewish, Muslim and Druze leaders who make up the Israeli Religious Council. In his address to the group, the Pope recalled his own visit to Jerusalem in 2009 and his own prayer at the Western Wall for peace in the Holy Land. He noted that in our troubled times, dialogue between different religions is becoming increasingly important to create an atmosphere of mutual understanding and respect that can lead to friendship and lasting trust in each other. This is all the more urgent, he said, for the religious leaders of the Holy Land, who are tested daily by the difficulties of living together in harmony.
We share a grave responsibility to educate the members of our respective religious communities with a view to nurturing a deeper understanding of each other and developing an openness towards cooperation with people of religious traditions other than our own.
Recalling his recent meeting in Assisi with representatives of all the world's major faith traditions, the Pope stressed that as religious leaders, we are called to reaffirm that the rightly lived relationship of man to God is a force for peace, adding that all of us are called to commit ourselves anew to the promotion of greater justice and dignity.
This is a truth that must become ever more visible in the way in which we live with each other on a daily basis. Hence, I wish to encourage you to foster a climate of trust and dialogue among the leaders and members of all the religious traditions present in the Holy Land.
Justice, together with truth, love and freedom, the Pope concluded, is a fundamental requirement for lasting and secure peace in the world.
May the Lord hear my prayer for Jerusalem today and fill your hearts with joy during your visit to Rome. May he hear the prayer of all men and women who ask him for the peace of Jerusalem.
Among those meeting with the Pope was the head of the Roman Catholic Church in the Holy Land, Latin Patriarch Fuad Twal, who spoke to me about the aims of this encounter.
Well, really, we wanted always to meet His Holiness to encourage this initiative. The group is composed from Muslims, Jews, Druze, Christians, Catholic and Protestant all together. Well, in these cases, our normal speech is to say that everything is okay, that we are more or less agreed in everything, that we'll do our best to encourage our faithful for more peace, more meeting and so on. I'm sure that this group, a religious council in Israel, is not done to deal with national or international issues. It is more or less to help to solve our local problems between Druze and Muslims and Christians, just small local problems. And at the same time, I confess that still we have many problems that we can solve between us without going to violence, going to the court and so on.
Can you give us some examples of the kind of issues that this council is dealing with on a regular basis?
Well, when there is a misunderstanding between the communities, when there is an attack, when there is a violation of rights for land, for houses, especially in Galilee, we will never lose the occasion to create problems. All the time there are something wrong. And that's why we can, I think, according to this, to our good relationship between the leaders can interfere with their faithful just in an administrative way to avoid more problems and to solve peace between families, especially families. Often when there is a problem about land and houses and and borders, in these cases, yeah, small cases.
Looking at the broader political scene and the involvement of the Catholic community there, what do you see as the current concerns that you're bringing here to discuss with the Pope and with other leaders in the Vatican?
Well, I don't think that we came here to discuss problems, just to give the voice that we exist there. It is just to encourage us to say that religions are done for peace, and as religious leaders, we have to go on this path, not to be afraid, not to be discouraged, knowing, but in the same time, our limits, because religious leaders, without the politic, we are unable to change anything. We need political decisions. We are not political deciders, but as religious leaders, at least we can pray, we can hope, we can encourage people. It is more this dimension, human dimension, spiritual dimension than political one.
The recent request for Palestinian statehood at the United Nations, how was that experience there in Jerusalem, in the Holy Land? What kind of effect has that had on your community?
Well, it depends of which community you are speaking about. For the Israelis, they were happy. For the Palestinians, we were unhappy. We, a Christian religious, we delivered a statement to say we encourage this full membership statehood. We encourage this, saying at the same time the recognition or not recognition of the state doesn't mean that we will stop negotiations. We have to go on negotiations. But from the other side, we have to stop construction, building, settlement, and so on. We cannot go with this spirit, I can say, arrogance, saying, relying absolutely on our power, on our force. But we encourage the statehood so they can discuss with equal rights, equal forces, maybe. Yeah.
Looking at the broader context there with the Arab Spring and the protests that have spread right across the region, how is that affecting the mentality of people there in the occupied territories?
Well, if you remember, we can imagine a small link between our synod and what we ask our people to be aware of their citizenship, to ask for more dignity, more consciousness, more sense of belonging to the land. And there is a small link between this and the manifestations and the bid of these young people for more dignity, more work, more freedom of movement and so on. So in one way, we encourage this movement, and I think that this uprising is coming, and there is no state immune of this movement. So I think the leaders, political leaders, they must be ready help and ready to prepare the ground for this movement. Otherwise, it will come with more violence. If it comes smooth, it could be better for them and for us, for everybody.
What do you expect from the international community at the moment? What kind of support are you looking for today?
Well, I think they have a role in all these events. Nobody is living alone for himself. The international connections and links, they are there. We need them. They need us. I wait from them to be more awareness, first of all, about our existence as Christians. They cannot make politics forgetting our existence and our preoccupation and our fears and our hopes. It would be nice if they ask us sometime, from time to time, what they can do with us, what we can do with them, with their collaboration. I wait more collaboration from the international community, more to be more involved, for more advocacy for peace and normal life, and that does not come till now.
Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Fuad Twal. Following the meeting with Pope Benedict, the delegation of Christian, Jewish, Muslim and Druze leaders came to Vatican Radio for a press conference to highlight their work for peace in the Holy Land. Among them was the Chief Rabbi of Israel, Yonah Metzger.
This event today, the meeting with the Pope, with all the religious leaders in Israel, it's a historic moment. In the world, and particularly in Europe, when you open the televisions, you see a lot of problems in Israel. You see bombs, you see tanks, you hear about violence, and we want to show you that it's not true. We are all the religious leaders, Muslims, Druze, Christians, Jews, together. We can live on peace, and this event is to send message to all over the world that we can do it. If in the Holy Land we can live together, all the religions, with peace, with honor, with respect, only because we are sons of the same father, sons of Abraham, why it cannot be in another place in the world?
Alongside the rabbis and bishops were leaders from some of Israel's Muslim communities who also highlighted a new spirit of cooperation at grassroots level with Jewish and Christian communities. Yet once the television cameras have been switched off and the delegation returns home, the many daily difficulties and fears facing local people caught in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict continue, as the Greek Melkite Archbishop in Galilee, Elias Shakur, explained.
I don't want you to go out with misunderstandings. Since you say things are so good, why things are not so good? In fact, there is still violence. There are still many injustices. There are still many problems to settle. And if we heads of religions have decided to come together, it is vital to keep these relations among us so that we try to make of our different religious affiliations a part of a solution rather than to wait and watch what's going on. I introduce myself to be a walking contradiction. I'm a Palestinian, Arab, Christian, and citizen of Israel. When one is suffering, I suffer also. It means we have to suffer for all the injustices that are done. And if we have any concern, it is to pray for justice and peace. For Israel, for sure, but for the Palestinians as well. Because the peace for Israel, we understand it as only possible with the implementation of peace with the Palestinians. We are here to tell you that there is, beyond the contradictions I mentioned, there is a hidden hope. And the hidden hope is the many common elements that we have in our different faiths. And we can achieve it if we want. I always say we Jews and Palestinians do not need to learn how to live together. We need to remember how we used to live together for centuries and centuries. And the last conflict is extremely painful for us in Israel, Jews and Palestinians, and for our neighbors in the occupied territories. And we pray, all of us, so that an end to that very hurtful situation on both sides comes to an end.
Greek Melkite Archbishop Elias Shakur of Galilee. Also taking part in that interfaith delegation was the Anglican Bishop of Jerusalem, Suhail Dawani. I asked him about the papal audience and about the painstaking work of keeping hope alive in the region today.
This council has been founded 4 years ago in Jerusalem. It is composed of Christian, Muslim and Jews. Of course, the five heads of the churches, the Muslims and the Jewish rabbinate, the chief rabbi, the both chief rabbi of Israel. We meet every other month, and recently we've been working on peace education curriculum. We hope that this will be distributed and will be accepted in both Israeli and Palestinian schools. I believe that peace will start on the level of the grassroots of people. I mean that we have to teach our children how to live together, how to respect each other. There is much ignorance in the lives of the children and young people. They don't know each other. They don't know who are their neighbor. And I believe that it's very good for our future generation to get to know other, each other and respect each other. And this is what we are doing to achieve in the coming months or years.
It's a very difficult task, isn't it? Because the communities are increasingly separated, not least, of course, because of the separation wall.
Well, we always say that these things doesn't help our coexistence. Between neighbors, there shouldn't be any walls. Nowadays, you know, and this at this time, people must cooperate and work together. People must get closer to each other, because by this we can eliminate hatredness and violence. When I know my neighbor, then little by little I will come to respect him, and he also to respect me. Then we can live in peace. But if we put something to separate us, I don't think that we can achieve that.
This delegation also contains members, if I understand correctly, from the Israeli government, from the Ministry for Religious Affairs. What kind of relationships do you think exist between this Israeli ministry and your group of religious leaders? How much is your voice heard at government level, do you think?
I hope to be heard more, because at this council, we try to address the political forum for the Israelis and Palestinians. And I think that at this time, we don't have any, not connections, any strong contacts with the politicians in Israel, and mainly in Israel, because they need to listen to us. And as far as we are working for peace, they have to listen to our demands as religious leaders in that territory. So we hope that we can work more together, you know, in Israel and in that land.
And with the leaders on the Palestinian, on the side of the Palestinian Authority?
Well, the Palestinian Authority are very supportive. And in our meetings in this council, we usually have the minister of Waqf, the Muslim minister of Waqf, and some people who really represent the Palestinian Authority, and Mr. Abbas. Well, they are very much encouraged by the Palestinian Authority to come and meet with us and be part of our council.
The message here is one of hope, of encouragement, and yet it seems difficult sometimes to see any signs of hope.
Well, I'm afraid to say that it doesn't look that much rosy, you know, the situation there. We have to accept the reality. But this is also, it makes more responsibility and pressure on us to work harder for bringing people together. So it means that we have to work together as Jewish, Christian and Muslims to bring about a just peace in that land. And this is, I believe, a huge responsibility on all of us.
You were also quite recently at Lambeth Palace attending a meeting, an ecumenical meeting, trying to, again, promote the role of the Christian churches in helping to bring peace. What do you see as the role of the churches outside of the Holy Land in supporting these efforts that you're doing?
The Lambeth Conference last July was a very important one, because it is Anglican-Catholic coming together to support the Christian presence in the Holy Land. I believe that even when I talk to our Muslims and Jewish brothers, I always say that Christian presence is very important. And now what that conference has really did and decided is to support the Christian institutions in the Holy Land. This is very important, because the Christian is always a bridge, and they have a role to play in the peace. So we have to keep the balance by our presence, and I'm afraid that we are shrinking as a community, and we need the support of the Christian worldwide.
My thanks there to the Anglican Bishop of Jerusalem, Suhail Dawani. An attitude of openness to God's will and generous service to others. That was Pope Benedict's recent reflection on the qualities needed by those considering a vocation to the priesthood today. The Lord's call to ministry, the Pope said during the celebration of Vespers in St. Peter's Basilica, is not the fruit of any particular merit. Rather, it is a gift we must accept and to which we must respond with generosity and disinterested dedication, not to our own project, but to that of God. His reflections came as the Pontifical Work for Priestly Vocations marked the 70th anniversary of its founding by Pope Pius XII. Among those taking part in the anniversary celebration was the new director of the National Office for Vocations in England and Wales, broadcaster and author Benedictine Father Christopher Jamieson.
We were gathered from all the different countries with representatives from, I think, all the Episcopal conferences of the world to consider the current state of priestly vocations in the Church and to look to the future, and in particular to consider a new document that's being prepared by the Office for Priestly Vocations.
What kind of stories were you hearing? Because as we know, there's a very different picture in, broadly speaking, the developing countries to the one we have in Europe and the Western countries.
Yes, the statistics are interesting. In Europe in the last 10 years, the number of priestly ordinations has declined by approximately 25%. But in Africa, Asia and Latin America, the number of priestly ordinations has risen by 10%. And if you add all of that together, plus the Americas, you end up with a small overall increase in the number of priestly ordinations throughout the Church in the last 10 years.
In England particularly, you've also had this phenomenon, haven't you, of many people coming from Eastern Europe, Africa, Latin America, coming in to swell the numbers, if you like. But I think, if I understand correctly, there's a general feeling that this is actually detracting from the churches back home, as it were, and so we may see an end of this in the not-too-distant future.
Yes, I mean, there's two things to that. One is we've had migration from Eastern European churches and other churches around the world to Britain, and people are becoming resident in Britain. So we need priests from those ethnic minorities to come forward. Now we're starting to see native ethnic minority priests in Britain coming forward to seminary. And I think that's really important. The arrival of priests from other countries who are just coming temporarily, well, the British Church has been built on that because the Irish clergy, of course, have been the backbone of the English Church. So it's actually not a strange situation for us. How long it will continue, the numbers involved, all of that will vary. But they are an important part of our history and our future, I think.
You deal with priestly vocations back home in the UK, don't
yes.
you? What kind of encouraging signs can you give us? Because it has been quite a bleak picture for many years, hasn't it?
What's interesting is that although the number of priestly vocations has declined in Britain, along with that decline I mentioned in Europe over the last 10 years, if you go back and look at the numbers entering seminary over the last 10 years, then the number has risen year on year up to the current year. Now, we did have a very low point back there around about 2001, but the figures are now much more encouraging. And so what I think we've got at the moment is we're at the sort of low point of the number of priestly ordinations, but we know from the numbers in seminary that this number is going to rise year on year now into the future. So the situation we're looking at now is one full of hope, and our seminaries really are filling up at the moment.
Are these people who begin seminary and perhaps drop out during the training period?
There is always a dropout, and there should always be a dropout rate from seminary. But that rate is not high. It's impossible to calculate an exact rate because it fluctuates. But we will still be confident that there will be an increase in the number of priestly ordinations.
What do you see as the most important factors in encouraging young people to consider a career in the priesthood today?
I'd slightly challenge career.
I think that
what we're doing in England and Wales at the moment is we're creating a national vocations framework. And this is the first time we've had a strategy of this kind that's going to be a national strategy. Previously, we've had local strategies encouraged by the national structures. But now we're actually going to have a national strategy. And this vocations framework, its main aim is to increase the numbers of people discerning the call of Christ in their lives. In other words, if we increase the pool of people who take seriously their formation in Christian faith and their openness to God's call, then we have two good outcomes. First of all, we have a stronger laity. And secondly, more people will find that they're called to the priesthood and the religious life. So over the next 3 years, we're going to be developing this vocations framework to enable us to do that.
I mentioned the word career, and of course we heard Pope Benedict reminding us that priesthood is not a career. It's not about
power and prestige. It's really about serving, about service, isn't yes. it? How important do you think is this message? Because many will still see it, perhaps, as a good option in a career sense.
Actually, certainly in Britain, I really don't think anybody sees it as a good career option.
Perhaps in the developing countries.
I think
in
other countries there may well be that because of the education offered and so on. But the kind of men we're seeing coming forward in Britain are people who are typically very well educated, who have to go through a very rigorous selection process, a selection process that's so rigorous that it now surprises the secular world. And who have to give up a great deal. So I think that the people entering now are entering it with the right motivation in Britain today.
There's a lot of debate, as we know, around the celibacy question. How much is that, do you think, a deterrent for many people considering a vocation today?
I think celibacy weighs very heavily on the minds of young men considering a vocation. However, those who've made the choice to enter seminary are quite clear that they see this as integral to their vocation, not just an obstacle to it. And I think helping them with that is really important. Interestingly, the other day I was speaking to a married Catholic priest of the Eastern Rite who works for the European Bishops' Conference, and he was telling me, you know, some people think that having married clergy would solve everything. And he said it doesn't.
How is the ordinariate perhaps affecting that, though? Because, again, within the Catholic community in Britain, you will see many Anglican priests, married priests, now becoming members of the ordinariate.
The presence of married former Anglicans in the Catholic priesthood has now been very common in Britain for many, many years. So we've to some extent stopped noticing already, and the arrival of the ordinariate priests will just be an increase of what I think we've got used to already. And I think for Catholics to have a married parish priest is no longer the great surprise it used to be.
Ecumenism, of course, is very well developed in the UK. Anglican-Catholic relations at the grassroots seem to be functioning very well through a lot of the country. But how much in this specific area of formation, seminary formation, do you think there is a value in bringing these training processes more closer together? I'm thinking here in Rome, we have Anglican seminarians at the Venerable English College, and they all, almost across the board, talk about that as a very, very important part of their training.
I think the future of this is obviously rendered problematic by the question of the ordination of women. So I genuinely don't know how that's going to develop. The relations that we have in this field, I think, are going to have to enter a new phase. And I don't quite know what that new phase is going to look like.
My thanks there to Benedictine Father Christopher Jamieson, the Director of the National Office for Vocations in England and Wales. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.